the Puck Guys Podcast, the best place for top hockey news and insight with, of course, a little West Coast bias. Now, here are your hosts, Patrick Mahoney and Jason Lamb.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Puck Guys Podcast.
Hey, girly.
What's up, buddy?
Round
two, great. Well underway.
Uh-huh.
Lots of series. Are looking very pretty. This is the series that a word that everyone wanted to watch. I mean, everyone kind of said that like round one was a dud, which I mean for us was because we just hated the outcome. Yeah. And then for LA fans, well, they hated the outcome.
Yeah.
And then I mean, let's talk about that for just a second before we give shout outs.
Uh-huh.
Round one, was it a dud to you, or was it kind of like it was hockey, so I'm going to watch it? That's kind of how I felt. I didn't think it was like a bummer. Like it wasn't something that I was disappointed with. Other than the Ducks not winning a single damn game and scoring two even strength goals.
Yeah.
But anyway, but like aside from all that, there were positive sides of round one, but I felt like it was kind of like hockey's on, so I should watch it. I didn't feel like it was a dud, though.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a dud at all. I just love hockey. So first round's the best because there's hockey all the time, and there's multiple. You actually have to choose which great hockey do you want to go watch, which one almost has a better storyline. At that point, you're for us and guys like us, it's like our soaps. It's like, you know, it's like, oh, I got to watch my shows. So, but now you have to pick which ones do you want to watch more? Which one is more intriguing? So there's some disappointments on the sweeping side of things. But on the other side, you end up having, a game seven. You get to see Winnipeg doing unbelievable things. And then, you know, upstart Colorado team taking it to Nashville for a couple of games there. So absolutely not. There's plenty of little upsets, things you didn't see coming, great saves, unbelievable goaltending. When you talk about how not only Jones played, but also how Fleury and Quick played. It's fun to watch all around. Any sort of intense hockey where the stakes are raised is never boring or a dud to me.
But wasn't the first round pretty much predictable aside from Anaheim being swept?
No, because I didn't pick
I didn't
pick Vegas to win.
All the professional pundits had the Ducks, Sharks, 50%.
50%, you know, and that was amazingly
toss up,
bad.
And the Sharks just smoked us. I didn't predict the Kings to be swept.
No, that was brutal.
Yeah. I picked the Kings to win that series. Obviously, not a professional writer, not a professional pundit.
Not with that attitude.
I don't
attitude.
Get paid with the attitude, right?
Yeah.
I don't get paid for having an attitude.
But anyways.
But for the most part, I felt like the people who should have won round one did. The teams
doesn't matter all that much as long as the games are entertaining. Philly did an amazing job, you know, against Pittsburgh, minus a few games here or there. But they won a couple of games.
It's the Sid show.
The one thing I kind of noticed so far about that playoffs is there's no real consistency other than those two sweeps in one game to the next. You can have a great game, look like just the most dominant team in the world, and then the next game you lose. And it's just like it doesn't really carry over. Every team now, the difference between teams is so small now that you can have a bad game, go out the next game, and outperform that same opponent. And so that's fun to watch because you just don't know how a game is going to go and who's going to perform, who's going to step up.
All right, well, let's get this show on the road. Let's get a shout-out to thegruelingtruth.net.
Uh-huh.
Everyone over there at The Grueling Truth, we appreciate all the support for hockey. Yes. We're slowly building up a market on that website. We were the initial show. Now we got the Black and Gold Bruins podcast. We got the Fourth Line podcast. So three shows for hockey. Mm-hmm. There's enough for everybody. We're not about putting anyone down. We just want to have hockey rise up because obviously we're the little man on the totem pole.
We just want to hug everyone.
As everyone on Twitter likes to say, it's kind of like, please like our sport. Our athletes are tougher than yours.
Yes.
We don't sit out with hangnails. We play with broken faces.
Yeah, right.
So that's always a thing. But no, shout out to Mike and everyone over at GruelingTruth.net who give us all the opportunity to spread the word about hockey. So go there and check us out. And any other sport you're into, they got a podcast, an article, a blog, something for you to check up on, so we recommend doing that. Lots to talk about. I know we just kind of just touched on the first round of whether or not we thought was a dud, but there's so much information coming around this week. I feel like we kind of need to talk about that now and get off that boat. Some GMs have been replaced or not replaced, let go, not renewed. I'm going to talk about that. Buffalo finally gets a chance at redemption after missing out on Connor McDavid. So we'll see how that goes. Oh, McJesus, as love to talk about. Mm-hmm. As everyone is fawning over him for not being a Hart Trophy candidate. It's Jesus, go suck an egg. Just throwing that one out.
Such a stupid thing.
I love to say that. Okay. The playoff game updates, and then we got suspensions and non-suspensions and goals and not goals that have kind of happened, which you and I kind of will disagree on, which I think is good.
Yeah.
Because finally we got some parody on this damn show.
Yeah, you're wrong. I'm
and
right.
And then
I kind
of want
to
just talk about the Jack Adams because we talked about the Hart. We got to talk about the Jack Adams, the coach trophy for the coach of the year, which, I mean, kind of is like, it's like really the GM of the year award because, I mean, you're only icing the team that you're given if you're a coach.
Okay, Pat.
Just throwing that out there.
Okay, good. We're going to argue on that too. Yeah.
So it's like two awards for GM of the year. You get two chances at it.
Whatever, however you're going to craft the conversation.
Just saying. And there's really no Ducks news, so all of you NHL fans who don't give a crap about Anaheim,
you won't have to listen.
You
can
stick around to the end. Let's talk about the GMs, man. I know everyone was talking about playoffs, but we got to get the GM stuff out of the way because that just kind of gets shoved under the rug. If you just kind of look at the news and watch the games, you don't really see that Ron Francis has been terminated.
Rod the Bod. It's Rod the Bod.
I just wanted to see
if you picked up on it.
So Rod Brendamore has that name.
Yes.
So
sorry,
Dad,
just totally threw you off.
Yeah, you did. Ron Francis, notorious for his cups as a player in Pittsburgh.
For the Penguins.
For the Pittsburgh Penguins. He's a killer. Mm-hmm. He was in the front office. This team, I don't know what to make of Carolina. They're like Arizona of the East, but better slightly. They always have that kind of like, oh, this is their year. They're the league lead in Corsi. They're the league lead with getting shot attempts, and they have this coach, Bill Peters, who, mind you, is now the coach of the Flames, has moved over to the West. Mm-hmm. How do you take this? Is this the owner coming in and kind of going like, no? Like, I'm going to have full control of this billion-dollar toy that I have, and that's just kind of the way I see it. I don't feel like Bill Peters is a fit, and now I don't see Ron Francis is a fit. We're going to make this team the way I see fit because I'm paying the bills.
Yeah, pretty much. They did a lot in the offseason that I thought was going to maybe make them a little bit more in contention, but I think they finished definitely two double digits outside of the last wild card. I want to say like 13 or 15 points out of the last wild card spot. That's unacceptable for a team that went out, got what they thought was going to be the next great goalie for them in Scott Darling. I thought they did a great job. I love Scott Darling as far as the technical side of things. And they went out and they picked up a lot of free agents and tried to really make this the year that, hey, we're turning this thing around. We're going to do it. And then to finish, I think, sixth out of seven in their division, completely unacceptable in the owner's eyes. And it's basically clean house. Not only is Ron Francis out, there was an option for the coach to come back. I think he exercised his option to move out. And then even Joe Nieuwendyk has resigned as the pro scout and advisor. So it seems this is why it's kind of so hard to get rid of GMs, is because generally when a GM is there, they're there to sell not only themselves but their idea to the owner. This is where we need to go. This is what we need to do. And it's easier to move players and coaches than it is a GM, because once a GM is gone, it becomes whoever you look for is now going to have a new idea and a new direction, and that usually trickles down to coaches being let go, assistant coaches, scouts being let go. It just changes the whole organization. So you don't see GMs being let go nearly as often. So with him going and then Nieuwendyk gone and the coaching gone, it's pretty much the coach or the owner saying it didn't work. This was our last shot, at least, you know, shot in the arm. We put a good team or what was good on paper out there, and for whatever reason, management failed us because these players should be good enough to actually get us there. So yeah, it's cleaning the house. It's exactly what it is.
So Don Waddell has been named basically GM. Prior to that, he was the president of the organization, I guess, is kind of the way I was reading about what his office management was dealing with when it comes to the Carolina Hurricanes. The president of Gale Force Sports Entertainment, which is the parent company of the Hurricanes, and all of a sudden he's in charge. He has experience with the Atlanta Thrashers, the Pittsburgh Penguins, and so now he's in Carolina. I've definitely recognized that name. I know that name, Don Waddell.
Yeah, for sure.
Funny enough, spoiler alert, when you're talking about the lottery that's coming out, well, the draft order, They had the number two pick. He seems to think that that's going to be an attraction for a coach coming to this team. Now, you, as the expert hockey analysis that you are.
Yeah, that's what I claim to be.
Now, I mean, that's why we have the show, because we're both experts at everything we do. And this is just something that, you know, we could just let the public know for free.
Yeah. Well, no one listens to us, so there's no one to tell us we're wrong.
I know, but it just takes that one that wants to pay us, you know, willingly.
It's usually our friends. That
it's true. But anyway, getting to the point, this Hurricanes team, I feel like no matter what coach you throw behind the helm here, isn't really going to make all the difference coming out of Carolina. I feel like there's personnel issues here. They don't really have that game breaker. Scott Darling has not been the answer in net. He's had the most
awful year.
But hey, he's had killer pads for the Worlds, the Captain America flag
for a
all
while.
Over, right? That's what I called him, a Captain America flag.
Oh, okay.
Now, he's got the American flag all over his pads. It's awesome. With the Worlds, but I mean, obviously didn't help him out in Carolina.
No.
Do you feel like a coaching change here and a staff change here is really going to make all that difference for Carolina, or are the Hurricanes in for a long-haul rebuild? Because I kind of feel like that's what's going to happen. They get the second overall pick. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why they're in that spot. I don't see them moving up.
You know, it kind of depends. I mean, I don't know if they want to, you know, say that it was – we put all our money into this offseason to make the playoffs, and it didn't work. And if that's our best shot, then let's tear this thing down and start from the bottom and figure it out. I feel like the Hurricanes are probably in a position where they're still maybe trying to find the right voice, and maybe they can find someone that's going to kind of help them out. But, I mean, you got to look. They've been losing. They lost franchise player Eric Staal within the last few years. So it's a little bit tougher as far as they've got good young talent in the lineup. I mean, you talk about Sebastian Aho and then Tero Teravainen. Those guys are good, and Ellis Lindholm. I mean, these are good young players that are kind of there, so it's not like they have to do a whole lot to kind of revamp it. They probably just want to go in a new direction management-wise, because I feel like they feel they've got enough of the good players. If they felt that the players were the problem, the owner probably would have stuck with the GM, would have tried to convince the coach to stay. I'm sure there was some conversation with Peters before he left. Hey, we're probably going to get rid of the GM. We're probably going to try and start to at least get a new voice and go in a new direction, that sort of deal. So I don't feel like they're going to completely tear it down and start over. I feel that they're just like, whatever was supposed to work hasn't worked. You've had your time. Let's get a new voice in here, see if that can spark the talent that we have. But I don't feel like it's a team that wants to just tear it down to the bare bones and build it back up, because they got enough assets to really kind of make them work.
I have to disagree. I feel like it's like a Wild, Minnesota Wild issue. They're middling. And I think the missing component between these two teams is Devin Dubnyk covered up a lot of the BS that's going on in that Wild organization. They didn't have a Ryan Suter on the back end, but they have good defensemen over in Carolina. Noah Hanifin's a great defender. Mm-hmm. And they have on the forward front, like you said, Teuvo Teravainen, Sebastian Aho, Jeff Skinner's underrated, and he's over in Carolina. But there's a reason why Bill Peters left and went to Calgary. I'd feel like Carolina's a little behind the eight ball here. I feel it's a good move by the management there to let go of everybody and try to start from scratch. But
ownership,
I feel like they really need to figure out this draft. Obviously, they're not going to get Rasmus Dahlin. That's the guy that everyone – falling for Dahlin is what everyone calls it, right? You want to get that guy. Buffalo gets that crack, which we'll get to in a bit. But moving on here, the Toronto Maple Leafs decided to stay with course and not give the reins to Lou Lamoriello.
Yeah.
He's removed from the GM position. Now he's a hockey advisor. Mm-hmm. Brendan Shanahan said that he had a three-year tenure, and that's what they agreed upon. So it's nothing that's a shock value coming around. Lamoriello, as you guys may or may not know of, has just been – he was the guy that was creating the success over in New Jersey when they were winning their cups. But now he went over to Toronto and has been, you know, a valued management position.
Yeah.
But I think it's a good move. I feel like it's kind of like out with the old and with the new. Bring somebody new in here and try to figure things out in the GM role.
Yeah, and he hasn't done really wrong in the GM position with Toronto. I mean, they're set up for the future. They're having a few, you know, heartbreaks in these game sevens that they're not just closing out.
Killer.
Super killer. So that's unfortunate. They're, you know, one win away from at least getting the second round and becoming somewhat relevant. But this is a team that was just in the gutter and just, you know, as much as you want to be a fan of Toronto, they really weren't the big contender that at least Toronto fans or sympathizers would view them as. For the rest of the league, they were there. They were kind of there. Not really. Auston Matthews changed that look. They're younger. They got Mitch Marner.
They credited him to that, too. It's like, oh, he got Auston Matthews and Mitch Marner. I'm like, eh, pfft,
he
okay,
won the draft.
Okay. Everybody would have picked Auston Matthews.
Yeah, it's not too far of a stretch. Whoever won that, he should look like a good GM from that. He's done fine, but like you said, it was agreed upon 3 years after that. He's just going to kind of not necessarily relinquish all command or anything, but he's just not in charge of that department anymore. So he's still within the organization, still looking to kind of help it out. So it's just a transition period for someone else to come in. And I think at this point, they're going with the two assistant GMs as kind of their intern GM until a permanent one can find.
Mike Babcock is in charge.
Pretty
that's
much.
What I feel like.
And I don't feel like that's too terrible, I'll tell you the truth.
No, he's a man of high regard, unless you're talking to Mike Commodore, who hates him on Twitter, by the way, if you look him up. So they're about one defenseman away from being relevant in this league. I mean, they got Jake Gardner. They got Morgan Riley.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I feel like that's a good start. I just feel that obviously it didn't work out for him in Game 7 against Boston.
Yeah.
And we talked about that last show when we previewed the the conference semifinals.
Yeah.
I think that this team, I mean, they really are only away like one really good Drew Doughty from coming home to Canada. Throwing that out there. I don't know. I mean, maybe. I mean, everyone should be in on Drew Doughty. Like, yeah. That's what's funny about this league is everyone talks about defensemen that are available or players that are available. Like who's in on John Tavares? Effing everyone should.
For the right price.
30 teams should be in on John Tavares.
31.
If you can't make it work, cool.
Yeah.
Like the legitimate teams, of course. Yeah. But, I mean, if John Tavares is like, I want to go to Anaheim, make it happen. Yeah. I don't care what's going on, Bob Murray. Trader, if you got to trade, I want to play in Anaheim. If you for one second don't think that it doesn't involve trading Hampus Lindholm and Ryan Getzlaff, that Murray wouldn't make it work. Murray would make it work.
All right. Well, if you want to,
I'm just saying.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You have
a perfect world.
No,
sure.
But like,
he can't move those people.
That's a perfect world, obviously, because he's not coming in.
Yeah.
But like I'm saying, in general, like this league is so funny when like they say that, you know, only certain teams are involved. Like every GM, if they're good at their job, is like,
shut up. No, what they're saying is not that
it's
everyone,
like,
that,
everyone
that they're not involved. The ones that can make it work, there is only going to be a handful of
everyone
teams
can
that can
work.
Make it work through
everyone
either a
work.
Trade or make it work through their salary cap, whatever. That's the salary cap era. So anyways, what does this have to do with Lamoriello?
No, because I'm saying that all they need to do is bring in somebody. If they're going to bring a GM in to replace him, I feel like he's easily replaceable. I feel like the moves he made, Freddie Anderson, no-brainer.
Yeah.
Mitch Marner, no-brainer. Auston Matthews, no-brainer. Cool. Yeah. What has he done that's been outstanding beyond those picks, which were just no-brainers to me?
Yeah.
Bring somebody in to get a defenseman. Morgan Riley's not there yet. You still need that 1A guy or that number one guy. I feel like it's the only role they need to do in order to, or the only role they need to fill in order to be competitive and move on in the playoffs. Because I felt like the Bruins are very beatable, and they showed that.
What are you talking about? He made an awesome signing, Patrick Marleau,
which actually didn't turn out bad. Well, wait, let's see what year two and year three has to do with Patrick Marleau.
We'll see where that one goes. But yeah, you're right. I mean, they're weak a little bit on the defensive end. You know, Ron Hainsey is there, and they still got Roman Polak, who, in my opinion, wasn't too terrible. Yeah, it wasn't too terrible.
Dinosaur.
I mean, they needed that size. But, yeah, you're going to have to be better as a team defensively, and that would also have to mean you're going to have some good defense to kind of help it out and facilitate what is the new NHL, which is speed generated from your defense to your forwards or just outright a great defenseman that can carry that out there.
Not if you ask Bob Murray. Yeah. Bob Murray says he doesn't like deep passing.
He likes that.
Bob Murray doesn't like fast players.
Is this the Puck Guys podcast or beat up on Bob Murray week?
Just throwing
it out
something. So going from Toronto over to Dallas, University of Denver's Jim Montgomery will be the new head coach.
Before the head coach is Brian Burke.
Oh, Brian Burke decides to step away.
Yes. Well, this is one of those things.
As head of hockey operations, right?
Yeah. So it was kind of one of those things to where it was agreed upon. He signed like a 5-year deal, and then it was pretty much the understanding between him and the owner was, hey, this is what I have, and I've got 5 years to do it. We'll meet after every year and see where we're at and kind of go from there. This was year 5 of that. And they both agreed, him and this was after they signed Peters to being a coach. Him and the owner both agreed that 5 years is done. It's, you know, that was the vision. We were hoping to be, you know, a real contender after 5 years, and given that they didn't make the playoffs this year, it just wasn't in the cards. And obviously Brian Burke's gonna step away, which is kind of nice, but it's a little bit different from what you would normally expect, where it's like, oh, he did horrible, he's out. It seemed like it was more of a planned thing, like Lou Lamoriello, but I thought
it was more or less because he didn't know how to get his hair cut or ties tied.
But he's such a good interview.
He's good. You know, he's very good.
He's that blue collar guy who just speaks his mind and that sort of thing.
You gotta play dump and chase, and you gotta have what does he say? You gotta have like grit. You gotta have truculence was his big word. Truculence. Bobby Ryan doesn't have truculence, is why he's not playing on Team USA.
I'm not gonna pretend I know what that word means.
Truculence. I don't know either, but apparently Bobby Ryan didn't have it. Didn't play with Team USA.
He's not good on
but,
the trucks.
That was my Brian Burke impersonation. Oh, well, it was just a deeper version of my own voice.
Wow.
So, not very good. I don't think it really matters.
Okay.
I feel like Bill Peters coming over to the helm in Calgary is probably going to make things a little better. But we talked last time that those two teams were very similar in coaching styles with Glenn Gullitson and Bill Peters. Yeah. So, I guess when you're talking about a head of hockey ops or a GM role, I mean, the coach can only ice what they're given, which is what we're going to get to with the Jack Adams finals when we argue about that.
Mm-hmm.
But Jim Montgomery.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that in Dallas? He's coming out of the University of Denver. No NHL experience. Montgomery said he won't comment until Friday when Dallas is expected to have his news conference, which was obviously last Friday.
Yeah.
Kind of an interesting move to get a non-NHL guy. Maybe they're hoping to have some success with a no-name. I mean, it's from – or not no-name, but
he's
like Jared Bednar had success in Colorado after his first stint where they bombed and he came back and made the playoffs.
Well,
do you feel like the same thing's about to happen here in Dallas?
Well, speaking of Colorado, Montgomery won the NCAA championship in 16 or 17, and then the following year he got to the Frozen Four. So he's had at least success at that level. It's kind of interesting because he is now coming to Dallas, and one of the things he said is that he would not uproot his family unless there was a significant chance or opportunity to succeed. So, I mean, he's kind of always been there in the back shadows of where is he going to play. I think he had the opportunity to even sign with the Rangers.
Yeah, they considered
him.
Yeah,
they
considered him. So did Florida.
Yeah, Florida, too. That was the other one. And so, you know, he sees a good thing in Dallas, you know. Dallas needs to have good goaltending and a little bit better defense. As long as they can kind of do that, and actually, quite honestly, a little bit more of the offense spread around. So it'll be interesting. His is all about process. He has like these five things that were instilled from him when he played in Maine from his coach. And that was, you know, you have to win 60% of the faceoffs. You have to have 50 hits in a game. I think you have to be like over, and I'm going to screw up some of these, but you're going to have like 30 some odd shots in a game.
You know what that sounds like?
It's like five things to do or seven things to do. And he goes, if you do four of those seven, if you win four of those seven, then you will likely win. If you do five or six of those seven, you are guaranteed to win.
That sounds like Xbox Live achievements. You've unlocked this achievement. You've hit 50 hits in a game.
But that's his thing. It's like, let's hit this. And the one that shocked me is, oh, we got to win 60% of the face. I was like, man, that doesn't happen too often.
Who cares?
He's just saying.
That's overrated.
And the other one was hits. You have to have like 50 hits in a game or 30 hits in a game or something like that. So like, it has all these points, and if you do that consistently enough, you get in there. That's it. So he's got a very detailed plan. It's a game plan that needs to work. So we'll see. This is his first step into the NHL realm. So we'll see if that kind of works. But you know, at this point, why not give someone else a shot? Because dipping back in the well, going after, you know, Lindy Ruff, the Planet. I mean, they're kind of going after these guys who had success in the past, but really haven't had any to speak of since then. Now it's kind of like, hey, let's just bring in a fresh everything, someone with, you know, new eyes on the organization, the NHL as a whole. So we'll see how it goes.
I mean,
I don't know. No one
based
really
on
knows.
His success collegially, sure, but based on what he had to say, I was kind of like, yeesh, that's your plan? Okay, yeah. Okay. All right, man.
No worries.
Whatever, bud. Good luck, Jim, in Dallas. Yeah. You have a lot of talent there. You have no excuses but to win.
Mm-hmm.
See what you can do. Hitch couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and get to your did you know.
Yes, I got a little did you know.
Break it up with all the serious talk about me bashing people.
Yes.
Let's get to some funny.
Yes. Well,
or interesting.
Interesting. It'll be funny because it'll actually be interesting if you actually know what this is all about. So I assume you know he's the brother of another famous hockey player, but he also might have been famous in his own right. His first name is Phil. Last name Esposito. Have you heard of him? No. Maybe you know Tony. Tony was the star of the family, obviously.
I only like the goalies.
That's Tony.
Yeah.
So those of you who don't know, Phil Esposito is considered one of the 100 greatest NHL players for the 100 greats.
When you play in the arcade era,
yeah,
it's easy to make that list.
Longtime Boston Bruins fan, Bruins player, and he loved the Boston Bruins. In fact, was crushed and recently did an interview and said he's still not over being traded to the rival New York Rangers. Not only traded, but traded to the team you hate for so long and being so good at what he was doing in Boston, bringing two Stanley Cups, leading the league a couple times. I think Art Ross, a Hart Trophy winner. So, I mean, just doing everything. It was pretty much, when you think Phil Esposito, first team you think of is Boston.
I think of Tony.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. You think of goaltending. Or you think of like the Canada series against the, you know.
No, that's
Russia,
legit what I feel like. Yeah. I feel like the Canada series in the 70s. Yeah, in the 70s. I don't remember that series because I wasn't alive, but I watched those games, seen documentaries on them. That's what I remember him from. Esposito's from that, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, this guy was prevalent. I actually ended up playing for the Chicago Blackhawks for the beginning part of his career.
Right.
Ended up going about 67, 68. Was on the Boston Bruins, Boston, all the way to 75, 76.
How do you spell Boston?
Boston.
How do you spell that?
It's with a W, I'm sure.
No, for sure. Like, I was thinking
Boston.
The wife and I were talking, and she said, I just watched Boston losing. She spelled it B A W W W W W W.
She spelled it or pronounced it that way.
And I was like, I think you should just talk like that from now on.
Yeah, right. I won't say it's a horrible accent, but God, it hurts the ears.
I said it would be annoying and funny right? For a little bit.
So anyway, so some of his accolades include having 717 goals at that point. When he retired, was only behind the great Gordie Howe. He now sits sixth.
He currently
sits 10th all-time in points. So I guess you could say he's an accomplished player.
He's
but,
okay.
But what you may not know about him is that he has direct influence in founding an NHL team. What team did he spearhead? It is, in his words, his baby. He gave birth to this team.
Florida Panthers.
No, but close.
Tampa?
Tampa Bay Lightning. So he is he was a co-founder of the Tampa Bay Lightning, which I had no idea about. Only person who actually told me that, my freaking father-in-law. He's like, did you know this? And I'm like,
did you fact check him? Did you fact check him?
No, all of a sudden, an article popped up because Boston is playing Tampa Bay in the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and it got interviewed, and they're like, hey, which one, who are you rooting for? Because, you know, it's all Boston. You loved Boston. And he goes, I still love Boston. Love Boston to death, but it's no contest. Tampa's my baby.
And
not only that, he's held various, pretty much every position you can hold in management through the whole tenure of, you know, from the beginning all the way on. So he made that happen, then was very integral, and now is still an actual radio color commentator right now for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Hence why he was interviewed in the first place, and this all kind of came up. So he's actually a radio color analyst or commentator for the Tampa Bay Lightning as a co-founder. I would have never known that. My father-in-law brought it up, and then I happened to see an article like 3 days later. So I found that was pretty interesting because I just assumed he did Boston and ended his career, and I'd never heard from him again other than he pops up every now and again on ESPN, or not ESPN, NHL specials. So did you know?
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Who is Denny Potvin that does the Florida one, right?
Mm,
Possibly. Old dude that we always make fun of. I'm pretty sure it was him.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was him.
Okay.
Yeah, we made fun of that guy a bunch because he would make like.
The cat Poppin? No. Dennis Poppin?
Denny Poppin. Okay. The guy who said something like he looks like the kind of guy who eats peanut butter off of his hand. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I think it's him.
You're like, what? Huh? We gotta get
more of
those.
I just remembered that out of nowhere. Yeah. I'm like, where did I hear that dumb quote? What did he say? Oh yeah, that old guy said that.
So any of you who aren't already Tampa Bay fans or diehard Phil Esposito fans, now you know something you didn't know. He founded the Tampa Bay Lightning, and if not for them, they wouldn't be playing Boston right now.
And we also let you know that he's a, you know, it's okay to be a homer if your money's involved.
Yeah,
because screw
much.
The team you play for.
Now,
the one that's making you bank.
That was one of the things. He's like, it's like, even now, this happened 3-4 decades ago. I'm still not over being traded. He's like, I can't believe I got traded.
Unreal. Yeah. Shut up.
No, but you know, he's like, it's my problem, but it's true. I'm like, wow, I got traded. Wow. He's still too good. Every interview is like, oh yeah, it's, I'm still not over it. it's his own little hang up.
He's over there brushing his shoulders off. Like, I ain't gonna be traded. Ain't gonna be. I got traded. I had no idea, dude.
And then what he got traded for was crap. So
of course, it never works out the way you think it's gonna work out when you get traded for great players. Yeah. That doesn't really happen. Oh, that's amazing. The NHL GM still overpay even decades ago. Amazing.
Yeah.
Let's get on over to what's going on in the playoffs right now in round two. Let's talk about the Caps and Pens. Right now, Pittsburgh leads the Capitals 2-1 in the second period. The series right now, though, Pittsburgh's down 2-1 in the series. Ovi, I got to talk to you about Ovechkin because time and time again he gets called, you know, he disappears. He's a ghost of the playoffs. You know, what's happening with him? He's terrible. He's never going to score 50 again. He got to 40 freaking 9 this year after scoring over or 50 last year. They traded away and got rid of players that helped this team offensively last season. And we didn't expect the same Capitals team as we've seen this year. I got to hand it to Ovechkin, man. I mean, he's really carried this offense. And in this playoffs, prior to tonight, I haven't looked at the stat sheet yet, but he had 13 points in 9 games. Anybody who wants to point a finger if they lose this series against Pittsburgh, you can't point it against Ovechkin. He's been lights effing out. He's been amazing.
Yeah, I mean, take away those first two losses where Grubauer was, as far as goaltending, less than stellar, we'll say, and be nice about it.
But that was to teach Holtby a lesson.
Yeah, right, to make him really want it. No, so I mean, yeah, exactly. You can't fault him. And even if you want to look at the past Pittsburgh and Washington series, you go like, wow, you know, Crosby really outplayed Ovechkin. He just won. He wanted it more. He did better. You look at their stats. They're damn close. Yes, Crosby a little bit over on Ovechkin, but I feel like those Pittsburgh teams have always been a little bit more talented than the Washington teams. And if you can shut down Ovechkin, you can probably win that series where if you shut down Crosby, you got to worry about Kessel. You got to worry about Malkin. You got to worry about a third line center, a fourth line center that can match up well against your third and fourth line and, you know, lights out goalie. So it's not a discredit. I'm not really surprised as my voice cracks. I'm not really surprised that Ovechkin's still doing well. He does well against Pittsburgh, just like Crosby does well against Washington. So it's fun.
Oregon's freaking Philly. I mean, yeah, Crosby crushed Philly.
Especially in Philly. When he's in those places, he's just a dream killer for those fans.
Like that comment last week, oh man, those two beers you threw at us, they were
full. What are you doing?
What a waste.
You're going to need those after I crush your team out of the playoffs. He's done a great deal. I felt this team was still pretty good. I feel like they all kind of got a little bit better as far as, you know, Oshie's good, Kuznetsov's good. Backstrom still doing Backstrom things, and I feel Carlson kind of took a huge step on the defensive side of things. So I'm not too terribly surprised that A, the series is close, B, these games are close. Prior to this one, well, we'll even include the first three games up until this one. They played now, 16 games, and that means 11 of those 16 games have been by one goal. So 11 out of 16, one team's winning by one. Two of those other ones were by two. So there's only been three games out of 16 that a team's won by three or more goals.
Combined games?
Total, yeah.
Total games, not 16. No one's played 16 games yet.
No. I'm saying Pittsburgh versus Washington.
Oh,
the last two series was 13 games, and then they played three this one. So 11 have been by one goal. Okay. Two have been by two, and then three have been by three or more goals. So I mean, that's close. They're all close, and so it's fun to see, and that's always a great matchup. So I feel like Capitals, it's their time. I still think this one's going to go.
I mean, you
long.
Picked Pittsburgh, didn't you?
No, I picked Washington in seven.
Did you pick Washington?
Yeah, but I think it's going to go seven. I still feel Pittsburgh is not that team that you can just put away very easily when their back's against the wall.
Well, no, it's like you said. I mean, you got if you shut down Kraus, then you got Malkin. And Malkin missed games, and he just scored a goal tonight to give him the lead. Yeah. So
he's back. Hagelin just came back. I felt one of the other things was their injuries. It depends how injured to key players Pittsburgh
or
is.
Just have Jake Guentzel. Freaking believable. That guy is one of those dudes that just shows up.
He's a money player, which means he shows up in the playoffs. I mean, he's still good during
or he's
the regular
just riding
season.
Shotgun Crosby. Just.
But he's been doing that all season, and even then he hasn't been, you know, at that top echelon top 20 goal scorers or players or point getters. You know, he's not on your radar as a top 20 guy in the regular season. Claude Lemieux was a very similar player in that he was good. He did all right, but he wasn't someone you were super focused on the regular season. And then when the playoffs came around, he just found a way to score goals, get points, and do all that. Bless you.
I sneeze. My bad.
So I feel like he's one of those money guys. Tyler Johnson on Tampa Bay, I feel, is another one of those guys. He just elevates the game in the playoffs. It just seems to work for him.
Let's move on over to the Winnipeg and Nashville series.
Another goodie.
Nasty. Get nasty.
Yes.
Big buff. Get ragdolling guys like they're his baby brother.
Get just buff nasty.
Grabbing two dudes. Yeah, you can't grab that guy. Let me grab
you.
Yeah, like,
you over here, you over here. You guys come together, talk, and think about what you've done.
He's just an animal. It's unreal how strong that guy is, dude. He's a scary guy.
The thing is, if you look at his face, he's pretty much just like
whatever.
Stoned.
Whatever, man.
It's
yeah,
just
whatever,
like,
bro.
He seems like the most laid-back dude in the world, and yet he'll kill you with a half smile.
I mean, this series has been crazy. Winnipeg wins the first game. Nashville wins the second game in overtime on a Fiala goal, which is crazy.
Yeah.
And then game three, I was like, oh, Nashville found their groove. They're up 3-freaking-0 in the first period. Winnipeg wins that game by 7-4.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It got to the point where even Pecorine is sitting there swinging sticks at Lowry and ends up getting a penalty.
Dude,
slash
I don't know what is going to happen in the series. I pick Winnipeg in this series. I still do.
Yeah.
But it's unreal. I felt like these games would be just tight, angry games. They've been angry.
Yeah.
But I feel like the Winnipeg Jets have a legitimate chance of actually beating the Predators. I picked that kind of because I'm like, I hate the Predators. I love PK, but the rest of that team. I mean, I like PK and I like Philip Forsberg. The rest of the team can just whatever. But I really feel like Winnipeg has that team this year that we all have been waiting to see. Connor Hellebuck hasn't had to be amazing, and they have a 2-1 series lead.
Same
right
with
now.
Patrick Laine. He hasn't been lights out in the playoffs.
Shifley's been money, though.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, Shifley's been money, and it's hard to deny that. And same with Buffalo. Big Buff's been just an animal, been a beast. Like we just said, talking about like ragdolling little brothers. All right, you two.
Time out. Think about what you did.
Is there a stoppable force for this Winnipeg team, or do you feel like they kind of found their groove and really put it to Nashville here? I mean, when you're up 3-0 in a game and you lose, that's gonna be tough going into a game four. I don't care where you're playing. I mean, they're in your head at this point. They won game three. Now they're gonna play game four. I mean, obviously you're playing in Winnipeg, so that barn's gonna be crazy. Dmitry Filipovich put out a tweet. Game puck drops between 8:30 and 8:45 Winnipeg time. I wonder what the average alcohol the blood alcohol content is going to be of the fans there.
Yeah,
that place is going to be rocking.
Yeah,
and they came out a dud in the last game first period. That's not going to happen tonight, man.
No.
I really feel like Winnipeg's going to take a 3-1 series lead.
There's a possibility, but once again, it's. Yeah, for some of the surprises that I've seen out of Winnipeg, this is a team that I've always said. We've said they look good on paper. You didn't see many holes this year or last year, the year before, really in their lineup for the most part.
Except the goaltending.
Goaltending. And I've been waiting for Hellebuck. You know, he's one of those, in my opinion, new wave goalies.
Vezina candidate, right?
Yeah, yeah. And but he's playing against another Vezina candidate and likely winner.
The guy's going to win. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, but it's always been good on paper, and we criticize Paul Maurice being renewed as the coach.
Oh, we trashed him.
Yeah, and so it's always been I have this thing when a team loses so often and never wins a freaking playoff game, even though they go to the playoffs. And it's just almost like that little thing that gnaws on you, and it just keeps staying there. So it's the monkey on the back until it gets off. And so that's where I was kind of going with Winnipeg. Is like, until they prove me wrong, I can't really back them. They are proving it this year. Hellebuck has been insane. Not only did he have two shutouts to end last season, he almost had a complete shutout in game one. So, I mean, he had a long shutout streak going. And even though lost game two and wasn't very – it didn't
wasn't
work out
great in game
in
three.
Game three, they held on and actually got a win. So the other – side of that coin is what is Nashville doing? And Nashville does not look like the same team they were in the last playoffs, where they were just
goaltending's
off. And that's the one thing I had kind of a question mark as well with Pecorino, is he didn't show me like he did last year in the playoffs being that lights out goalie. And now he's getting frustrated. He took a penalty for slashing Lowry. I mean, that's a goalie that's just a little bit off kilter, and he is a streaky goalie. But I haven't seen anything in the first round from Nashville that makes me – against Colorado – that makes me think they can dominate the rest of the way. And so that's where it's kind of shaky. I felt that their experience might work for them a little bit, but as you can see, game in and game out, there's just not a whole lot of momentum that carries over from one to the other. So I have a hard time thinking that Winnipeg's just going to come out and just roll over Nashville. Nashville can come back. I had Nashville in seven, but honestly, in my opinion, that's looking shaky. I feel like Winnipeg could probably wrap this up in six, if not seven.
I hope they do. Yeah. Oh, God, I hope they do. Yeah. I hate Nashville. I know we're an NHL podcast, but oh, my God. The only thing
Stop
I got to give them credit for,
homer.
The credit I got to give them, though, is the crowd. Mm-hmm. The atmosphere in Nashville is insane. The whole where they
only match
they
by Winnipeg.
Razz the goalies, and yeah. They go, you know, you
you're
suck.
Waiting for it. Yeah.
It's all your fault.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Like, that chant's amazing.
Yeah. And for those of you who don't know that chant, basically it goes, when the goal is scored, it goes, he shoots, he scores. And then they taunt the name of the goalie. So, you know, it'd be Hellebuck, Hellebuck, Hellebuck. You suck. It's all your fault.
It's so funny.
It's so good. The best way to get rid of that is score a goal while they're chanting it. Which I think Winnipeg did.
Let's talk about Tampa and Boston. Tampa leads this series 2-1. Mm-hmm. They have game four tomorrow.
Sorry, is it Boston or Boston?
Boston.
Ow.
Brad Marchand.
Ow.
Patrice Bergeron. Pasta.
Uh-huh.
Tuukka Rask.
All right, you can stop now.
I can't stop. Won't stop. I'm glad to see Boston in the hole. I'm not a fan at all. The only player I like of that entire team. Oh, I know two. Chara and David Pastrnak.
You don't like Bergeron?
No, I don't like Bergeron. He gets all this credit for being this two-way center.
Yeah.
Okay, cool, dude. Rad. You're like Andrei Kopitar. I don't care about you either. Like, you're like Jonathan Toews. I don't care about you either. Oh, that's amazing. You're great without the puck. You know what's great about hockey? The person with the puck.
Oh, my God.
No one cares about the guy without
the
puck.
You know what Bergeron has been doing in the playoffs? He's the actual one been scoring goals for the damn team. That damn line.
Pastrnak's got five goals this
season. I mean, that line is absolutely
leads
killing.
The NHL 19 points, so maybe they're doing some good things. The more intriguing thing is how many players Brad Marchand's going to lick. I'm just waiting for that number to keep going up.
I feel like he's licked more players in the playoffs than scored goals. Meaningful goals.
Close. Very close. That's a weird thing.
Yeah.
Imagine being that guy's teammate.
Yeah.
Hey, like, I heard the NHL told you to stop licking people.
It was claimed never to have happened.
Mm-hmm.
But it was they probably didn't tell him directly. They told the team. Boss.
Probably came from the top.
Hey, get your kid to stop.
It was Gary Bettman.
Get your kid to stop licking other kids.
Gary Bettman called. Now, Brad, let me talk to you about this. You're on NBC, Brad. You can't be licking people.
You are full of stupid impressions
today. That's my best impression. It's a great impression.
Yeah, the Boston, the Gary Bettman, the Brian Burke.
Yeah, no, that's the good one. Those are the good ones.
Keep your day job.
I don't have one.
I know.
is this Kucherov, Vasilevsky, and Stamkos' time? I feel like it is.
Hell no.
I picked them over. I picked the Bolts over the Bruins in six or five. I feel like they were going to walk all over them.
So I didn't quite see the end of the last game they played, but
3-1
prior to then. Then I don't think they have a single point in this series. That whole line.
Pasta, Marchand.
No,
and
you said Kucherov.
Oh, no, Stamkos had the empty netter.
Oh, okay, there you go. They finally got one. An empty
netter. Stammers finally got one.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying that line finally got a point. They had 0 points in the first, two games, three games? Where are they at?
Yeah, Cedric Paquette can score. Tyler Johnson can score.
Yeah.
Cooch can score.
Yeah, well, they could, but they hadn't. So as far as Boston and Tampa Bay, the biggest thing is that Tampa can roll four lines, and they didn't need the top line. Boston needs the top line. The only way Boston, in my opinion, will win this series is a combination of Tuukka Rask playing out of his mind, which he did a very good job in game one, has not been very good the last two games as far as the goals have gone in. And so he's got to outplay Vasilevskiy, which Vasilevskiy's even been a little shaky from time to time this series, but getting Tampa Bay in trouble. They had the 28th ranked power play, penalty kill, and Boston had the 4th ranked power play. So they've already scored a few power play goals. They need to almost goat them into penalties. As they goat them into penalties, that's where Boston might be a little bit more successful, but they're still going to need Tuukka Rask to play that upper level. And given the last series he played, and he only had less than a 90 save percentage, and then he's got the first game he did well. After that, nothing.
So you're saying Tampa's going to win the series?
Yeah, and you had him in five. I had him in six. I just feel they can roll too many lines. The Johnson point line really kind of came out in that third game in Boston, where it's a little bit tougher. They kind of been a little bit silent, but they're not only shutting it down, but they're also scoring too. So it's a great second line to have.
All right, so now let's talk about the Misfits of Vegas versus the
Golden Jose Sharks. Golden Misfits.
Golden Misfits.
You know, that's what Wild Bill
William said. Carson. Yeah,
yeah, Wild Bill.
Call ourselves the Misfits.
Golden Misfits.
I think it's amazing, man. I love that team. Yeah. I was pissed when they lost 4-0 last night.
Yeah.
And I got to put it on the Sharks. The Sharks played a hell of a game. Martin Jones in particular put up some crazy numbers.
That's what I was saying.
I really feel like Vegas needs to win because I don't want the Sharks to win. That's my prediction, and I'm sticking to it. But this series has become nasty.
Yep.
You see a suspension. We haven't even talked about suspensions yet.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Which we should. We will talk about briefly after this one. Marc-Andre Fleury versus Martin Jones. Do you feel like Fleury can still win this series for the Vegas Golden Knights? They're getting production.
No, he's washed up. He sucks. He's horrible.
No,
they should call me. They should call me. I'll
be serious.
In there.
No one's going to call you. I barely call you. Aww. I'm your best friend. You should just take some hints.
Listen.
NHL doesn't love you, man.
They can't see it, but there's a tear rolling down my cheek.
There's two tears I see.
Yeah. Which cheek?
Both. Both cheeks.
That's not what
you're not. Your butt cheeks?
Yeah.
It's
sweaty. It's hot.
So we got to talk about this series between goaltending because that's what it's been. It's been more or less. Like, who's going to be on their game? Because you're talking about goalie interference calls, overtimes, the games have been close. You as a goalie.
That is me.
How do you feel these two guys shake up? Now the series is tied 2-2 going back to Vegas for game five.
Yeah. Well, once again, if it's not me playing, it's all a moot point. But if
course.
We're going to play with minor league goalies like Fleury and Jones, then I'll nitpick at what they're doing wrong. Pretty much they're almost doing nothing wrong.
A case in point, everyone got after Martin Jones for missing the Carlson bar down shots. Like, oh my God, even Sharks fans are like, you should have had that in overtime.
No, that's insane. On that particular one where Carlson picks it in overtime over the stick side shoulder, Martin Jones was, I want to say about five.
Let's not blame Brent
Ask
Burns
me a question.
Or Paul Martin on that play. Let's blame the goalie.
Yeah. So anyways, as far as Jones, he came out about 5 feet out of the top of the crease. I mean, that is an aggressive play, especially for someone that's quick and can fake a shot and then move to the side. Now he's got to make up a ton of room to get back to the net and cut off that angle. So he saw shot coming. He anticipated it and made a bold move to come out that far. You do not see goalies come out that far when the player has room and opportunity to move around. And he just blasted a shot. Just hammered it right over the blocker side, which, if you don't know, is probably the hardest thing for a goalie to move and move way up high. It's just an awkward movement for any goalie to have to raise that. You're also holding a stick, which adds weight. It's not like a glove where it's a catcher's mitt, but, you know, most of it is in your palm and very little bit is on the tips of your fingers. A stick is going to have weight to it. The blocker has weight to it. It's an awkward move. And he blasted it over the top of that, back post down. I mean, it just... If it wasn't so, yes, that's in from the ref, the signal that it was a goal. It easily could have been, that was bar down and out. It never actually hit in, you know, so it was an amazing shot. And as a goalie, when that happens, I applaud the shooter. I go, hey, buddy, if you can do that, you know, all the time, you deserve those goals because they do not happen often and they are beautiful when they happen. As a goalie, I don't like giving up goals. Someone does that, I say, nice call, man. Just
well,
nice.
It's like I said to you in our pre-show. I was like, as much as I rag on you goalies, I was like, it's so bad that everyone just like trashes them to give up a goal like that. Yeah. They give no credit to the shooter. Like, oh, he should have had that. Yeah. Oh, it's his fault. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I mean, you can blame a goalie for a lot. But when you have a guy coming in on a 2-on-1 and he just puts it in that spot. Yeah. By the way, if you guys don't know, Bill Carlson has had an amazing year. Yeah. He's been lighting up goalies all year. Yeah. Vegas... I don't know if anyone's heard of them. Yeah. Finished first. They're killing it right now. They swept the Kings. They're nobodies, though. Like, yeah. Martin Jones should have had that. It was a Bantam AAA player.
You got to get
off.
It
wasn't William Carlson.
Got to get off the internet listening to
it's,
stupid
no,
people.
It's just, like, I see it, and then I go, like, what the? If even, you... like, fan bases of the Sharks were like, yeah, Jones has got to have that. There's no reason he should have had. He shouldn't have had that shot. It's like. Yeah, there's every reason. Yeah. As you just stated, he did everything he could and went and it went back bar down.
But sometimes you just can't stop.
You can't stop everything. Yeah. I mean, some games, sure, but I mean, it's a rare occurrence when an entire series you just like, I'm putting the brakes on this whole thing.
So but, there's a lot of factors that goalies have to consider. I think you now have a new appreciation knowing me and how I've been able to.
What the hell is he supposed to do?
Yeah, well, knowing me and kind of breaking it down, if you have, you know, just a real quick eye test, even. No idea what goaltending's like, having pucks shot at you. There's a million things that have to go through your mind between not only is he going to shoot, where is he going to shoot it, how's my stance, what am I covering, is my positioning well, am I, you know, where I need to be between the posts to take up as much room. If the shot's low, I've got to drop quicker than he can release a 100, you know, a 90 mile per hour slap shot from in close. And then not only do I have to stop it, I've got to put it in a good spot so I don't leave a bad rebound that someone else could smack in. I also don't know if he's going to fake that shot, move to the right, shoot, or move to the right, and then pass it back to the middle. I've got to then grab my skates, dig him in, push left, push right, stop, all within control without looking like I'm flopping all over the place. That's running through your mind as the shot is happening. So you got to go off of instinct, and you got to go off of your experience.
But
and
it's like instinct with a plan. Like you can't have so
he
a plan.
He winds up. You get set. He comes out and be aggressive, and it's a bold move because, like I said, at that point he's pretty much committing to this guy's going to shoot. And not only did he go and was that bold, the dude somehow found a spot, just barely found a spot. You tip your cap because he overplayed that shot and he still scored. And at that point, it's not like he was timid and was like, well, maybe he might pass. I don't know. And then the shot comes and then he's slow to react. It was just a bullet.
So this series is tied 2-2. Let's talk about a couple of things that happened.
Real quick,
this
Fleury is amazing too, and Fleury, even though he had
just prior to that goal, made an outstanding glove save on Logan Couture.
Exactly, and those are the saves goalies dream about. If I get one of those saves in my little beer league BS games, I make that save. I tell the shooter, "Thank you. You made my evening and possibly my week." Because if we get one of those saves, and that's
nothing's
not even
better,
playoffs,
sir.
That's not even the NHL against NHL shooters, to have that and be a highlight reel save, it's the best feeling for a goalie, and it gives you a lot of confidence. He'll bounce back. That game was, you know, a game that was a little rough. It's going to be a close series.
I mean, come
I still got Vegas winning.
Fatigue's
got
to label into this too a bit. Yeah. These goalies been playing all year, and these have been rough games.
Yeah, I mean, and you can't expect him to be that one goal game, shut out every game. You can't expect that. There's going to be a little bumps in the road. He should respond. He's too good of a goalie not to.
So this game, the series is tied 2-2. Game 5 tomorrow in Vegas. Don't miss that. Uh-huh. Now let's talk about plays that have happened in these series that are kind of questionable. We got to spend a little, you know, a brief time on these.
Yeah.
The first one being Let's go all the way back to the East Coast. Let's talk about the suspension to Tom Wilson. Suspended 3 games for his hit on Austin Reese. Mm-hmm. Honestly, interesting, because just the game before was backed by Dumoulin. The NHL, yeah. Who was like, yeah, that wasn't a headshot on Brian Dumoulin. No suspension for you, Tom Wilson, yeah. Because Ovechkin was coming from the side, kind of a coincidence collision. He was hitting him from behind. But, like, in open ice.
It was almost like a sandwich that happened.
Yeah, and he clipped his head on Dumoulin. And it was unfortunate for Dumoulin, but I got to agree with the NHL there. I don't think it's a headshot.
Yeah, for the most part, because he drastically changed his head position just prior to impact with Wilson. He stopped and braced for it and lowered down.
Because he saw Ovi.
Yeah, because Ovi was coming in, and it was going to be a nice little shoulder check. I don't think he was really anticipating Wilson being there. Wilson was trying to probably give him a check to the back, is what it looked like. And then when the dude stopped and then turned his head into it, I mean, that was just collision.
Or he was trying to like bump him off the puck, but he stopped.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay.
And Wilson talked about it, and he said, you know, he talked with the NHL, and they both agreed that Wilson didn't see, he didn't even see Ovechkin coming in for the hit. So he was literally just going to kind of give him a little push after he dished the puck and didn't think anything of it. And then because Dumoulin was bailing on an Ovechkin hit, he just ended up having his head just in the wrong position. So even though head was the point of contact, it wasn't targeted. It wasn't even looking to be a head hit or much of a hit, in my opinion, because he was coming from behind him, trying to push him as he was chasing him. So anything it would have been would just been a push. So that gets a bye.
That was the game before.
Yeah. Now
he's gone 3 games for the hit on Austin Reese.
Yeah.
Broke his jaw.
Game
injury on the play. Concussion. Yeah. He's not going to come back for the playoffs. Tom Wilson's done for 3 games. I have to agree on this call.
Well, the call.
The NHL finally gets it right, I feel like, with a hit.
What about the suspension length?
I agree with it. I think he's good for that. I don't think it was. Kadri's wasn't a hockey play. Yeah. So Kadri probably should have gotten 4 or 5 games if you're going to label this a 3-game hit.
But he didn't, so they set the precedent.
I know.
So it's not your NHL, it's theirs.
It always is. Yeah. It's always their thing that they make up as they go along.
Seems
we
like
get pissed
it.
Every time we talk
We're
about it.
We're not the only ones. All fans, all 2 of them listening to this podcast, and then also all the pundits on there, they say, NHL, get it right. Get the reffing calls right, and then get the suspensions right.
I mean, Tom Wilson went through his head. I mean, you want to say he brushed his shoulder a la Drew Doughty?
Nah.
I don't think so. I think that he had – I mean, you see the replay of Aston Reese brace for the shoulder hit and then take a shoulder to the face. It's hard for me to say anything other than, you know, Wilson should be suspended for X amount of games. I think 3 was the right mark.
Nah.
It's unfortunate for Reese that he's done. He broke his jaw. Yeah, he's not going to come back at all. Penguins go on and play the Stanley Cup Final. It's not going to happen for him. So yeah. I think you kind of have to punish Wilson no matter what. 3 games is kind of light for breaking a dude's jaw with a head hit, but I think it's the right call to suspend him. You disagree?
I disagree. Definitely in the length of it. Here's the thing is, a la Drew Doughty, I also...
Different play.
It's a different play, but at the same time, even in Drew Doughty's case, Drew Doughty, the head was the principal point of contact. In Tom Wilson's, there was no targeting of the head. Not that Doughty's was either, but there was, for Tom Wilson, there was no targeting of the head.
But the onus is on the hitter.
The thing is that they're different size players. It's a fast game, and the shoulder did make contact before the head made contact. Now,
we're talking like maybe a slight brush.
I know, but you got 2 different sized guys, and contact's going to happen. Stu Grimson came out and said this. Listen, it's a fast game with different size guys. Collisions will happen. This, to me, looked like a hockey play. He ended up, yes, unfortunately, hitting him in the head, but or in the jaw. But, I mean, the thing was coming up a shoulder to shoulder. He braced for it. The hit slightly hits the shoulder and then hits the head, and then the jaw is broken. So, for me, it is borderline. I can see a suspension. I can see why they would maybe want to do it. The problem is that once they say, yes, it's a 1-game suspension, then they start adding on to it. The reason they're adding on to it is he's a repeat offender from an incident, I think, in October of last year. So he becomes a repeat offender. They tack on a game. And then because they said, yes, he gets suspended 1 game, they look if there's an injury. Yes, there's an injury. So then they tack on another
game. So how do you disagree with that?
For something that the only – here's the problem is
what
that –
what is Tom Wilson's game? To be
play,
that guy.
Play on the top line.
To be that
for
guy.
For Washington.
He's to be that guy.
He's going
to
be
every
a hitter,
once in a while, put your stick on the ice, chip in.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if they have a reputation in the NHL.
No, but it does
eyes,
matter.
No,
NHL.
In the NHL, it should not
prior
matter.
History is a reputation.
Yeah, well, that's a prior history, but someone can have a reputation and not have a prior history. Dustin Brown. You can see Dustin Brown runs around and can hit people.
Brad Marchand playing the All-Star game.
Yeah, well, I mean, but he's had prior history. But for a while, he didn't have a prior history because it's only like what, a handful of months.
18 months, I think.
Yeah, so I mean, if he hasn't been suspended or fined in a handful of months, he's not considered a repeat offender, but that reputation is still there. So I don't like the fact that, oh, it's a reputation play. They can't look at it that way.
So you felt it was a one game worthy penalty?
Yes, but unfortunately, because of the way they define how you have to suspend somebody, it's, and they even said in their thing, it was like, not only did it hit him in the head, but that he also, you know, left his feet for the thing, or he went up and through. I'm like, you can go up and through somebody as long as you don't leave your feet prior to contact. As long as you do that, if the contact forces you up and off of your skates, that's fine. But he got low, tried to make a hit shoulder to shoulder, and it forced him up, actually, into his own bench. You know, the hit for me was, it was labeled for shoulder. It was looking like it was going to be a big hit. They grazed shoulders. They did touch shoulders. So that means to me, the initial point of contact is the shoulder, not the head. The head is immediately after that, but he's making a contact to the shoulder first. And that seemed to be his intent, was I'm going for the shoulder. I hit the shoulder, but I also hit the head. And what they're end up going to do is just they're going to, because there's a concussion, the NHL is going to go, well, we don't want concussion.
Well,
lawsuits down the road. So we're going to make example. And then once they say one game, then they go, okay, so we're all agreed. One game. Yes, or whatever. And they go, now he's a prior history. So there's another one. Okay, all right. And then, the dude's injured. He's concussed. There's another game. And now it becomes a 3-on-1 that might have been maybe a one game. It could go either way. I don't blame you for one. But now they're kind of locked into their rules of a repeat offender. So I would feel that should weigh in. Whether or not, I mean,
the argument for me would be like, well, Kadri got 3 for a non-hockey hit. There's no business in that hit whatsoever.
Exactly.
So then the precedent should be smaller for Tom Wilson based on
what Kadri
his hit was.
Yeah, Kadri was looking to hurt someone.
If you're looking at this compared to Kadri, then Kadri should have got 5 or 6 games.
But he didn't.
And then Wilson got 3.
So there's the precedent that they set with Kadri, and they're just kind of going, well, that was equally as bad, even though he was trying to make a hockey play that just didn't quite go right in a hockey play.
All
right,
so what about Evander Kane on Belmare in Vegas?
He was
cross-checked the face?
Yeah, he was.
One game?
Frustrated. Yeah, exactly. Another one of the things where the intent is there. And for my money, if they are intentionally trying to hurt somebody, that should outweigh what ends up happening to that person. If they're injured, if there's a prior history, that is beyond reckless. That's what makes the game look bad, especially if you're losing and you're a sore loser and you start freaking cross-checking
people. Yeah, that
was
bad.
You just get, it's just dumb, and it doesn't make the NHL look good, doesn't make the player look good, and you go like, well, we didn't like it, but it was a cross-check to the head.
Got to call
one game. It's just I don't understand the rationale between someone intentionally making a bad hockey play or a reckless play versus someone trying to make a hit that went south.
Intent has never been the factor that's been taken into consideration.
And I feel that that should almost have more weight than
regardless of injury, there should be an intent involved.
See, I mean, because you'll have guys who are like, my intent was just to body check, make a good body check, and do my job of finishing that check, and it went bad. He, you know, maybe he moved, or maybe I missed my thing. I accept the responsibility for that. But if it's
it should get progressively worse, right?
Yeah.
If you consistently miss your mark and it was a hockey play, yeah, the suspension should be more severe. Yeah. But if you're cross-checking someone in the head or throwing your ass into someone's head along the dasher, that's not a hockey play.
That's just, you're going to end someone's career more that way than the other way. Unfortunately, jaw broken, concussion, not good. Unfortunate, but in my opinion, it was a hockey play that he was trying to do that didn't turn out right versus, you know, someone cross-checking someone in the face. That's nuts. What are you going to do? What happens if Bellamar has a, you know, cracked jaw?
Well, so, there's my thing. Games, is like, and all the fans
he's not a repeat
mad
offender.
At that. It's kind of like, well, what a baby. It was a headshot. Like, these are human beings that have families and careers and, you know, the same makeup everyone else has with brain injury issues. You got to call it.
Yeah.
You got to say it's a problem. The problem with the NHL is they don't make it consistent. So, obviously, there, I'll agree with you on the Kane one. It's kind of like, that's not a hockey play.
Yeah.
It's got to be something different. Let's get to something that's in the same like,
yes,
let's talk about our enforcers here. Yeah, if we wind down the show.
So if we're talking about Tom Wilson, a lot of people would probably consider him.
Quiz me. Okay.
Kind of consider him a goon.
And, no, he's definitely a goon.
Okay, so
a goon of today's age.
Today's age, score. Which is a really light goon compared to this list I'm going to give you. So we got a fun top 10 list for you. So top 10 worst goons in NHL history.
Worst meaning like the nastiest, or worst like they weren't very good at being a good goon?
No, they are the worst people who are goons. No, they're the worst players, but somehow had a career.
Okay.
So kind of think more of how many penalty minutes or fighting majors they got versus how many games they played.
I think you could probably guess like the top three.
Yeah. So I know you, and there's a few that I don't know, so I don't think you would know either. So there is a list of top 10. I'll give you the three I don't think you'll know because I don't really know. Gord Donnelly.
No, never would have guessed.
Yeah.
Him.
No. So so he's a Quebec Montreal native. But to give you an example, he played a regular for four different teams. He engaged in 155 fights in 580 total games.
So he definitely was a scorer.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's why they got him on there. You might know that guy. You know that guy. You know that guy. You know that guy. never mind. You might. Oh, Mick. I'm going to screw this up. Vukota.
Never heard of him.
Vukota is the last name. I'm happy to butcher that because I don't care. But yeah, this guy's career total, 17 goals in 574 games. But he also sat in the bin for 2,071 minutes. So extrapolate that. So for every game, he spent in about 4 minutes in the penalty box, give or take. And then, all right. So I think the other ones you can go. Do you have any guesses in the top 10? I gave you two. I knew you wouldn't know, but.
Tiger Williams?
No.
Tiger Williams?
No.
No,
they do not have Tiger
Williams. Not that
Williams.
Back. Okay, so they have, obviously, they have Stu Grimson.
Number one.
Yes.
Number one.
He's
worst.
A monster.
Worst
he's
goon.
A monster.
The thing is, he's so adorable.
What about Wendell Clark?
No, not on there because he actually he put up goals.
Yeah, I mean, but he's a goon. They got to fight.
Well, hold on. Don't rush the bit. Stu Grimson here. he took on anyone and everyone, and we saw that with his time in the Ducks. So he had the 211 total regular season fights. Between 96 and 97, he fought 24 different times. His career ended with 2,113 penalty minutes and just 17 goals in a little over 700
Never forget
games.
That year when he fought Vandenbush twice in the same game and like
three
ended
times.
His face or three times.
Three times.
Ended
a
his
rubber
face.
Match.
Blood everywhere on the ice.
All
well,
over
he fought Vandenbush twice, but he got ejected for the third fight. He fought three times.
Yeah, so he fought three times, but he fought Vandenbush
twice.
Okay.
Blood everywhere.
So
I mean, just his nose was just gone.
All of Grimson's, the back of Grimson's jersey was red, and it was a white jersey to begin with. So they had a lot to clean up. All right, any other guesses besides Stu Grimson?
Ooh, Chris Simon?
No.
All right, hold on.
Once again, he had some
Steve
hands.
Ott?
We're looking at like barely scoring, I think, is what they were trying to do with this list. Like,
oh my God. Okay. So then we're talking like George LaRocque?
Nope. But what I'll give you is number 10.
What the hell?
Don't look at me incredulously.
Okay, hold on.
Okay.
So
here, I'll give you number 10. Zenon Konopka.
A former Anaheim Duck.
Yes, now retired, played with seven different NHL clubs, which means he was loved by all teams. But yes, he's been nothing but a goon. He recorded measly 30 points in 346 games while piling up over 1,080 penalty minutes.
Is Bugard on this list?
No, not Bugard. I
the boogeyman, rest in peace, is not on this list?
Here's the thing about the list. The more I think about it, I feel like, with the exception of maybe Stu Grimson and one other person on this, there's a difference between enforcer and goon.
Yeah.
Is there?
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
Because Bugard, for me, would be... How do you define
an enforcer?
An enforcer. But I would also just say Stu Grimson
I don't
is
think he's
enforcer.
A goon, though. I mean, Grimson was a goon.
Was he?
He was
kill
you.
Skate,
is Bob Probert on the least on this list?
No.
Because he would score.
Yeah.
Because he could actually score goals. He had like a 30 goal a year.
All right. So Christoph Oliwa.
Okay, I know who that is,
too. The Polish Hammer.
I would never
hammer.
Have guessed him.
Yeah.
The Polish Hammer.
That's what they call it.
Oh, my
literally
God.
Literally nailed opponents on a regular basis, getting into 154
it sounded
fights.
Sounded oddly sexual. Yeah. Not a fan of that.
And just 410 regular season games. Once again, most of these guys do not hang out on the same team, but he was listed at 6'5", 245 pounds, but he would take on everyone, Stu Grimson included, and the other guy, Vukata?
Vukata?
Sure, why not? Let's see. He didn't even slow down late in his career, engaging in a league-high 31 fights during his last full season in 2003-2004 with Calgary. Number seven, you'll remember this one, Peter Worrell.
Oh, yeah. Florida Panther guy.
Yes, exactly. So, once again, a very imposing stature as he is 6 foot seven. 250 pounds light.
He's a monster.
NHL. And wow. All right. He fought 120 times in just under 400 games and had 1,554 penalty minutes. It's a lot. The other one, Rob Ray.
Oh, okay. I would never would have guessed him.
Yeah, but he racked up over 3,207 penalty minutes.
Buffalo Sabres guy.
Exactly 900, yeah. Razor is what they called him. But he would always go toe-to-toe with Ty Domi's, Jeff Odgers.
Is Ty Domi not on this list?
No, he is not.
This list sucks. This list sucks.
Well, don't get mad at me. Get mad at sportsbreak.com.
No one's heard of him.
Number five. You're going to be really pissed. Ken Baumgartner.
Oh, please. Former Anaheim Duck.
I didn't know this was his nickname. The Bomber from Flin Flon.
Which no one knows.
I have no idea what the hell that's about.
He reminds me of Star-Lord from Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one. Do you know who I am? Star-Lord. I don't know who the hell you're talking about.
That. I don't know. I never really watched that movie.
You should. It's funny.
You should.
Chris Pratt's great.
Yeah.
Apparently, Ken Baumgartner is just as great from Flim Flam.
Yeah, from Flim Flam, apparently. So he has a Harvard MBA. Harvard MBA right now. But let's see. He had 51 postseason tilts. So
ooh.
51 fights ooh. They don't fight often in the postseason.
True, but I mean, like, where the hell is Ty Domi on this list?
I'm just saying
Where's Bob Probert on this list?
All right, so for all of his games that he's played, he played 696 regular season games. He had 13 goals. 13 goals and 2,242 penalty minutes. Number four. Kelly Chase.
Okay, I know that one.
Okay, for a second there, it looked like it said Chase was a pricky hockey player, but it's prickly. Same with him.
St. Louis Blues.
Yes, longtime Blues guy, 17 goals. I believe he's a commentator now, too. He's only a 17 goals, over 2,000 penalty minutes in under 460 games played. Number three, we already covered. Number two, the last one on the list, Jody Shelley.
Oh, yeah. Long time Columbus Blue Jacket.
San Jose.
Rangers, Philly.
Yeah. He had 1,500 penalty minutes, engaged in 173 professional fights.
And Grimson would have killed him if they ever fought, but they didn't.
Yeah. Let's see. Shelley chucked the knuckles 30 times. Second only, what was it? Oh, in 2003-2004. So
F you, sports break. Killing my dreams here.
But he's from Nova Scotia. So, anyways, and then Stu Grimson, number
goon.
One.
He's an enforcer.
I don't know.
When has Shelley ever been dirty?
I don't know. You want to talk to me?
I do. All right. I don't understand.
All right. Well, talk to me, and I will direct you to sportsbreak.com.
Okay. Everyone go after sportsbreak.com.
You can go in their comment section and go way off on how bad they suck.
Do it for me.
Do it.
That was fun, though.
Yeah, was it?
It's always fun to trash other players.
Well, it's fun watching you get upset.
Yeah, I love getting mad. Let's end the show on a high note,
ooh,
if we may. The Jack Adams Award nominations have been out. Gerard Gallant. Uh-huh. Butch Cassidy, the Sundance Kid from Boston.
Word.
And then Jared Bednar, Colorado.
Yeah.
This might be one of the few times where they're all very well deserved.
Yeah.
I'm having a hard time picking between the three. Just, I want to say Gallant's going to win just because Vegas is Vegas, and Vegas picked the Misfits, the Golden Misfits.
Yeah.
But Bruce Cassidy, I mean, I didn't predict Boston being this good. And then Jared Bednar, who the hell thought Colorado would come from the pits of, you know, honestly, hell, I just said. To come back and make the playoffs with Nathan MacKinnon having a hell of a year. Yeah. You agree with these?
I feel they're all very deserving. The fact that Boston was a point away from winning their division and would have been third in the NHL. So I think they finished fourth in the NHL. That's really amazing. given that they still had to be behind Tampa Bay and their loaded team.
Eesh.
But Bednar was a very good success story.
Or sex story, everyone put it.
All right, I'm getting parched. I need more beer. but that's crazy that he was able to do that with that Colorado team. It's the fourth biggest turnaround in NHL history as far as what they did from one season to the next. That's pretty easy considering how low the bar was last year, being just god-awful. But I think this has got to go to Gallant.
Has to.
He just brought in, just a whole new team, gave him a whole new identity, had them playing four straight lines, everyone's rejects, the Golden Misfits, helped rally them. They swept they made the playoffs, shocking. They broke every freaking record.
Won the Pacific Division.
I mean, over 100 points. I mean, just all things you look for a coach that's had time to work with a team, and he's hasn't had time. He's barely been employed for a year with Vegas, and so the fact that he's gone through just a draft, the free agency, the season, and really, I don't feel I've ever really hit much adversity. I mean, this is probably the biggest
except
one.
Except their goaltending, yeah, in the beginning of the year.
I mean, yeah, I guess that's it. But I mean, even that just came out sparkling. I mean, just looking beautiful. So you just can't take away from the uncertainty of a coach. To be able to take that uncertainty and almost use it as a power. It's like, they don't know us, and they don't know what we're capable of, and they devalued you. Here's a game plan. Let's get it done. And they've never looked back, and I'm tired of picking them not to win. So if any player is up for any award, I'm just going to go Vegas, because I'm tired of being wrong.
I'm tired. They got to be the Sharks. We got tired of being wrong there.
Yeah,
I have to agree with you. I would definitely put Gerard Gallant, then Jared Bednar, then Bruce Cassidy.
I would
not to take anything from Bruce. He's got a lot of great players on that Boston team.
We just have a problem as Ducks fans with that first name.
Boston, and I don't like Bruce. I hate Boston more than anything. So that is the show, because I don't disagree with you on the coaching. I thought we were going to disagree on who we were going to pick.
Nah,
I thought we were going to go more Bruce Cassidy. Honestly,
no. I
thought you'd be like, well, he's done a lot with the Boston team. It's aging, and these young group of kids coming
Boston.
Up. And Boston and Matt Damon and Ben, all the way back. That's what you love. You love all those mob movies.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I do actually. I love all those Boston movies. I love the Town.
All the Boston movies.
I love what was that other one? The Departed.
The Departed. And then what's the classic?
Saints.
No, what's the classic?
Boondock
Affleck
Saints.
And Damon, the classic one.
What I know. You know? Are you asking?
I'm asking you. What's your favorite?
Listen. I'm not a hunter, and
but you like
Goodwill. I wish you no goodwill, so I have no idea what you're talking about.
So, yeah. I thought we disagree more on that, but we don't.
Nope.
You got to give that to Gerard Gallant and then Jared Bednar. That's a close one, though, honestly, because what Bednar was able to do with this team coming out of nowhere last year, finishing bottom by far, then making up like over 30 points in the standings. But Gerard Gallant taking a bunch of misfits and creating something out of nothing, really in a brand-new market, something else. Yeah. So hats off to them in Vegas. Let's go Golden Knights over the Sharks, just because I don't care about San Jose.
Okay.
But thanks for listening, everybody. You know where to find us, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, the Puck Guys Podcast. We appreciate all the feedback, comments, and support, and we'll be with you guys in a week or so. So find us on thegrillingtruth.net, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye, guys.